Chapter 23. Hey, Tully, you awake in there? Spence thumped Tully's door with the heel of one hand. Get up and let me in. I've got food. She thumped the door again and held the bag of takeout in front of the door cam. Got your favorite, pad thai, onion rings, and fusion quesadillas. It's the chef's special, salmon with lemongrass and coriander. Come on, let me in already. You love fusion quesadillas. Spence put her ear to the door. Nothing. Tully was probably sleeping like the cremated dead. Decontamination was hell. After her last experience, she'd slept for 18 hours and seriously considered changing to a career where no one was ever forcibly parboiled and scoured by people in hazard suits. Even her hair had hurt. Tully, Charles A., are you alive? She said again, still with her ear to the door. Check your pulse and tell me, will you? More nothing. Spence touched the small square screen beside the door and it lit up with a graphic of a keypad. She and Tully had exchanged entry codes, but she'd said she didn't want them routinely going in and out of each other's private quarters without asking first, and he had respected her feelings. Only this wasn't routine. She hadn't seen Tully since he'd stumbled out of decontam, red and raw in medicated white pajamas, saying he wanted to sleep for a year. He hadn't answered her calls or replied to texts or emails. There was no way she was going to leave without making sure he was okay in there. If he was in there. So help me, Tully, she muttered as she tapped in the entry code. If you're dead on the floor, I'll make them bring you back. The door slid open, so I can kill you again. Her voice trailed off as she felt for the light switch on the wall, put it on maximum brightness, and waited for the pile of clothing on the bed to erupt with sleepy profanity. Seconds passed. Yet more nothing. Tully wasn't there, and the room was more chaotic than she had ever seen it, everything thrown around like someone had tossed the place. A desperate search for clean underwear? Not hardly. Nobody wore any underwear after decontam. You got a couple of days off to recover, and most people spent the time lying naked on memory foam with an extra-large jar of skin balm. If Tully was doing that, it wasn't here. Spence set the bag of takeout on a shelf and picked her way over to the bed. Maybe something there would give her a hint as to where he was. If it didn't, she could try asking someone in ops to locate him by his implant. Normally, ops refused, saying they weren't a stalking service, come back with a warrant. Occasionally, though, a tech who knew you would trade favors. Not that her job in the tissue lab gave her much to barter with. Hey, one crisis at a time. Jump off that bridge when you come to it. Tully's voice in her head was so clear he might have been standing beside her, only he wasn't. She had barely started sorting through the mess on the bed when she found his wadded-up lab coat. All her alarm bells went off. You never took your lab coat home. You were supposed to drop it down the dirty linen chute at the end of your shift. Anyone who forgot would get a reminder every 5 minutes on comms until they brought it back. Hardly anyone ever forgot, least of all Tully. It was one less item of laundry to put off doing. Something flapped as she shook out the coat. His lab ID badge clipped to the lapel. Spence blinked at it. This was his new badge, the one they'd given him after decontamination, because the indicator strip on his old badge had turned bloody red from end to end. She'd watched them drop it into the disposal bin for incineration and expulsion. So how could the strip on this badge be hard, bloody red all the way across? It couldn't have been a mix-up with the badges. That just wasn't possible. Therefore, someone had screwed the pooch in a big way. It was Murphy's Law, as absolute as the speed of light. Any pooch that can get screwed will get screwed. And she knew which pooch had been screwed this time. She was holding his ID. The door to the cell opened and Hicks looked up. At last, someone had come to give him hell. The company power couple, he hoped. He was dying to take them on. Instead, it was one of the Marines from the arresting team wearing full combat armor. "Guess I've got a better rep than I realized," Hicks said, laughing a little as he stood up. "Hope you brought grenades." He cut off as the Marine stood aside and Rossetti came in. Hicks immediately snapped to attention, mostly by reflex, but also to cover his shock at how haggard the colonel looked, like he'd just come straight out of combat. Rossetti nodded at the Marine. She slung her weapon so she could remove Hicks's white cuffs and toss them aside.
"Colonel Rossetti?"
Hicks asked, still at attention.
"As you were, Corporal Hicks." The man's voice was heavy. "We need you, in ops."
Hicks felt the same terrible plummeting sensation in the pit of his stomach he'd had back on LV-426 when Ripley and Newt had been trapped in a dark lab with two facehuggers.
"We didn't kill it," he said.
"No, you didn't," Rossetti said. "It killed Fox and Wells. And now it's loose."
It looked like his life sentence in a company black spot was canceled.
He should have known, Hicks thought. He wasn't getting off that easy. Never had, never would. "We need Bishop, too," he started.
"We know. We've got him," Rossetti said.
"Now, for God's sake, Corporal, haul ass!"